Hello, my name is Elder Price, and I would like to share with you the most amazing book.
Welcome to Broadway Baby, the podcast taking one casual theater goer to full out fangirl. And this week, we focused on a latter day and listened to Book of Mormon. I am your host, Kimberly Schmidt, here with my husband, Jay Schmidt.
Hello, my name is Elder Jay Schmidt.
And our baby, Alex Vasella.
And we would like to share with you, na 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 na.
We would like to share you our Broadway-based pod. Broadway-based pod.
Oh,
it's a quick rhyme scheme. I just was thinking quick, and that's what came out. Okay?
That's fine.
Is that fine?
Yeah, that's our whole relationship. Rhyming and singing, and things come up. Alex, how are you? We haven't seen you in a little bit. We got a little busy being back in New York.
Yep. I'm pretty good. Baby's met a little bit of world. First of all, I'll get this quick out of the way. I had maybe the most specific Broadway dream I've ever had, maybe anyone's ever had.
What was it?
I dreamt that I had won a Tony. I don't know what for what, the dream did not world build enough, and that Josh Lehman was helping me with makeup for the ceremony so I could be like ready to look pretty that night. And okay. He was like, Josh Lehman turns this mirror on me, and I see I'm like, it's really like heavy eye makeup and like huge, like really red lips. And I was like, oh, the lips are making me a little uncomfortable. And he goes, no, you got to do it. I'm like, but I look ridiculous. He goes, no, the eyes will look ridiculous without the lips. But we toned down the lips a little bit and I was happier and I slayed apparently. I don't know, I woke up. It was the most, I need to, next time I see Josh Lehman, I gotta be like, hey, I don't know what you were doing in my head, but here's...
That's good for you for having good Broadway dreams. Normally when I have them, it's like, hey, you're in the show and you're on tonight. You don't know anything about it or any of the words. Figure it out.
You're in Cats. That's the whole dream.
Yeah, pretty much. Tonight.
You're in Cats. You can't fit in the Lycra.
What are you trying to say?
Those are the dreams that I have, and then I just dance naked.
Oh, okay.
I was nude, of course. And most of my
Kimberly, the naked cat. And then I finally, last I talked with you guys when I told you I was writing a musical, I was still in the middle of my binge of just writing, and that has stopped, not because I ran out of inspiration, just because I finished what I had to finish to give to my co-writer. It lasted about 3 weeks, and I wrote and fully demo tracked upwards of 20 songs.
Okay.
And yeah, they're not all fully fleshed out as in like, you know, this song is completely done, but like enough that like these are the musical ideas I want to play with this song.
Sure.
All laid down for my co-writer. So now we're going back and working on the script and we're gonna not get too far ahead of ourselves. But I was like, wow, 20 songs, 3 weeks. Okay.
That's something.
Yeah, and there's some reprises in there. I wrote a pre-prize, which I did not mean to, but I had to spice something up earlier.
All right.
And as I said last time, I have a bad habit of writing in minor keys. They're all in minor keys, except for one song that's in major, and it's not good. So I don't know if I can't write in major or if I just haven't figured it out yet, but the one song where I tried, I'm like, this is the one that's not good.
Maybe you just don't like major keys.
Maybe.
Maybe the song is good and you can't tell.
Maybe. Maybe I hate my own creation.
Yeah, you might just need to find someone that knows how to write in a major key and give them a song and be like, this needs to be peppier. And then I'll be like, okay.
Yeah.
And someone some lyrics.
Yeah.
Yep. And I...
If you're looking for inspiration, Jay and I just watched Howard on Disney+, about Howard Ashman, who wrote Little Shop and Beast and...
Little Mermaid.
Okay. That's cool.
Documentary.
I will say this.
It's very sad.
It's a very good story. The documentary itself is not as well made as I anticipated it being.
You could like listen to it as a podcast.
It's more, yeah, honestly.
Yeah, I hate when documentaries do that. And then, so final Meat World, I worked up the courage to send you guys a demo from my musical, and the wave of panic I felt hovering over that send button. Oh boy.
Why? It was great.
Because I was like, what if they hate it? I'm glad you liked it.
Peppy. But it's also like
in a minor key.
It's in a minor key. I would say this. Fortunately, there is like a lot of promise to it. if that makes any sense.
Yeah, like, that's all I was kind of shooting
yes,
for.
Yes, exactly. And that's all you really need out of a demo. Because yeah. I was like, I feel like he's nervous about the quality of, like, the mixing and things like that. And I was like, that's not really what he needs at all.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, the heart and soul is there, and that's really what matters right now.
That's exactly what I wanted to hear.
Yeah.
My question is, how funny are they trying to make it?
So we're, the basic, without spoiling any of the plot till my co-writer comes on, there we haven't figured out exactly how many of the lyrics are going to be jokes, but I'm imagining it sort of like the songs are doing the dramatic lifting and the books are just slapstick ridiculous.
Okay.
And some kind of balance between there, because I thought I wanted to, like, we'll get to Book of Mormon does funny lyrics, I think, maybe better than any show I've ever heard, where you laugh instead of being like, oh, that's kind of amusing. I haven't mastered that. And also with the songs, I'm world building, and I wanted the music to sound like I said, it's based on a movie that is very serious. So I wanted the yeah. music to sound like this movie, the musical, but then the book and then some of the lyrics would bring out the parody.
Okay.
But like the melodies to be like dead serious.
Because when you send it, you're like, oh, it's a comedy. And I was like, listen to it. I was like, no, this seems pretty intense. Yeah. I was like, okay.
It's a heavy moment. Yeah.
Cool.
Yep. I'm glad you didn't hate
it. Have you met any other world?
I don't think I have. I mean, minor world, as opposed to minor key world. Because I was so excited about the fact that I finished my writing binge, I went on a little bit of a Spotify binge of musicals written by people who didn't start in musical theater. So I listened to Waitress, because Sarah Bareilles, singer-songwriter, and then Hadestown, same reason. Anais Mitchell was singer-songwriter. Mm-hmm. And then, obviously, Book of Mormon, and then...
Memphis? Yeah,
I don't know Memphis.
Memphis is written by Bon Jovi's guitar player, Joe DiPietro.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and he wrote Toxic Avenger.
Oh. Okay. I like Toxic Avenger.
Toxic Avenger.
Yeah. Highly recommend Memphis. I think it's on Netflix.
Don't watch the Toxic Avenger on Broadway HD.
No, do not do that.
It's so British, it's not even funny.
New Jersey.
Oh, I'm a Toxic Avenger, isn't it?
Kinda. And it's, well, here's the thing. I don't normally.
From New Jersey.
I'm not trying to throw anyone under the bus. Like, I like British musicals, but it's like...
It takes place in New Jersey.
It's about New Jersey, which, like, it doesn't get more American than, like, New Jersey. You know?
We're in New Jersey. Oh, it's Kevin Smith it is.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I wasn't even supposed to be here today.
I don't get it.
Well, we have fun here at Broadway, baby.
Clerks.
Oh, okay.
Have you ever seen Clerks?
Once. It's black and white, right?
Yeah.
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 Where's that musical?
I feel like
my next project.
Why do I feel like it's... I don't know. Sometimes I like make up things that I've heard that are going to happen. But that's a fun Spotify binge. Yeah. I love Spotify binge.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other shows that you would recommend besides Memphis that would be fall into that category?
Memphis, Toxic, Spider-Man.
Spider-Man, yeah.
The Lion King and Aida for Elton John.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but Elton John is kind of transcendent.
He's a theatrical man.
Yeah, it still counts, though, because I think Lion King, was that his first I'm doing a musical?
I think so.
Yeah, that counts.
And I think in his book that my mom read and then told to me, basically, he does talk about, like, figuring out how to write a musical, like, in some
way. Okay. Well, the show we're doing today, I didn't realize until this listen through, even though I've listened to it a bunch, is kind of a low-key Lion King parody. Not so much in story, but like in just the jokes they make.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so good.
But that's for later.
Can you think of any other musicals?
Chess.
You're right, Chess.
I've listened to together. There are many. But I can't.
They're all
really
jukeboxes.
Jukebox doesn't count.
I agree.
It's one that actually.
Bowie wrote whatever that like, whatever that show at BAM was.
Okay, Sting wrote.
Oh, Lazarus. I thought that was a jukebox musical.
Maybe I don't actually know. I didn't see it.
Sting
wrote
the last ship.
The Last Ship. Yeah.
Yeah. Does the Who's Tommy count? Because that was a concept album they musicalized. I can't tell if that counts.
I'm not sure because they didn't write it to be a stage play.
Yeah, they wrote it to just be a concept album.
A concept album, right?
You know what I always, what concept album I always thought should be, like, fleshed out, musicalized? Sure. Speaking of Bowie, Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars.
Yeah.
And I've always had some ideas for what they could do with it, but I don't think anyone wants to listen to my opinion on that. But it's a great album, and it's technically, it has a story. It's just really, really vague from the lyrics. So, like, yeah. I feel like some it's right for someone, like, expanding it and bringing it together, because the songs are all amazing. I love that album.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. The world that I met is, now that we're back in New York, I did walk through the theater district.
You did?
With Emily, because it's where she lives.
Oh, that's right.
And okay. So I walked through some theaters, and it was very sad.
Aww.
Because there's just nothing there.
Is Times Square, like, dead?
Yeah. There are people there. I don't know why. There's nothing for them. But it was very strange because we were walking to get dinner, maybe? And we walked past some shows, and I was just like, oh, there should be a line around the block.
Yeah.
But it was just quiet.
Oh, boy.
It was very strange.
It's quiet midterm.
But there, because, like, stuff was starting to open, like, March was, like, about to be, like, the peak of the theater season was about to happen. And so there were marquees I hadn't seen yet that I walked past.
I Spend Hours at the Glass House.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Diana hadn't opened yet. There was something else. And I walked past and was like, oh, yeah, this marquee is up for this show that didn't happen and may never. Although Diana's going to be on Netflix also by the guy who wrote Memphis.
Oh, okay.
And they quarantined the entire cast and crew in a hotel, and they're filming it for Netflix.
Huh.
Before... Do we think it's going to start to happen more? Because I don't know when we're coming back as a people.
Dinner.
Yeah.
If the producers have the money to do that. I'm wondering if we'll see shows that were that had announced they were coming but didn't have a theater yet. So they're technically not losing any money right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm interested to see if we almost skip a generation, like yeah. Shows that have lost all of this money in back rent while they weren't open will close, and shows that didn't have a theater yet but were fully capitalized will just pop right in.
Here's a question. So we know now there are going to be Tonys. What came out this season? I can't really remember where it started or where it ended. But we got to do an episode on it, so I'm confused as to what's going to be up for Best Musical.
Best Musical will be Tina, the Tina Turner musical, The Lightning Thief.
Okay.
These are what's eligible.
Oh, I see.
What's eligible is Tina, The Lightning Thief, Moulin Rouge.
Okay.
And there was one more, and it also wasn't original music. I'm forgetting at the moment. The only two men that are eligible according to like normal rules for best actor in a musical are Aaron Tveit for Moulin Rouge and Chris McCarroll for The Lightning Thief. Well, so Aaron Tveit gets a Tony.
Looks like another, yeah, looks like another Ithaca boy is getting a Tony. Here for it.
There are a lot of women eligible because it was a pretty female heavy season, even with what hadn't opened yet. So maybe Adrian Warren gets a Tony for Tina.
Okay. Is company's probably going to win Best Revival, right?
Hadn't opened yet.
It didn't.
Oh, it didn't? I thought it was open for a little and then closed.
It was still in
previews. It was in previews.
And that doesn't count, right?
Nope.
Nope. I think probably.
They should fix that, but the question is how many Tony voters don't go in previews. Tony voters go once it's open.
Yeah. And also the precedent that sets is not great.
Yeah. So I feel like we're going to see a lot of special Tonys.
Okay.
We're going to see maybe some region, like an extra regional theater Tony.
If I'm being honest.
I don't know. We're going to see a lot of commercials for whatever shows have the money to come back.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are.
Performances, 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 three people get a Tony, performances.
I didn't realize that when you were talking about like who was eligible, quote unquote, I thought it was like a hypothetical situation.
No, it's happening in November.
What?
Which by November will we even know if we're allowed to open? I don't know. I'm Broadway.
I don't No, I think that to me it seems like a big waste of money.
It seems like a waste if there's not a concrete thing they're promoting. If by November there's a vaccine and everyone's like, Broadway's back March 1st, then by all means, like, open up group sales, do as many performances as you can to get people to buy advance tickets.
Yeah.
But if there's not a concrete thing you're selling, I don't see the point. But also, do you want the four shows that are eligible this year to be lumped in with whatever happens next year?
Yes.
Yeah, I do.
That's what I want.
Especially because if nothing's opening till January, it's still not going to be a quote-unquote full season.
Yeah.
The only people that want to win a Tony this way are producers.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Like.
Yeah. Because there's going to be a huge asterisk next to whoever wins the acting awards.
Yeah, but also at the same time, it's like, if I'm an actor and my quote goes up by 100% because I am a Tony winner.
That's true. That is true.
The general, what we have to remember is that 98% of the theater going public doesn't know anything about what's actually going on Broadway. They don't care. They see they won a Tony. They're like, they're a Tony winner. They must be good. Like, it's not, you know.
I was trying to see if they had actually said what shows are eligible. Let's see. Playbill made an article.
Did anyone actually watch that group?
Oh, Jagged Little Pill.
Jagged Little
Pill. Fourth eligible show. Best Play, Seawall, A Life, The Height of the Storm, The Great Society, Slave Play, Linda Vista, The Sound Inside, The Inheritance, A Christmas Carol, My Name is Lucy Brown, Grand Horizons. Actually, that's fair competition for Best Play.
Yeah, so Slave Play wins a Tony.
Best Revival of a Musical, no musicals opened within the eligibility window.
Cool, man.
The shows that were going to open would have been West Side Story, Company, and Carolina Change. There are a few eligible for Best Revival of a Play. Frankie and Johnny at the Clair de Lune, which I saw and was great. Betrayal, The Rose Tattoo, which I saw and was fine. A Soldier's Play. Revival schedule that didn't open. Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, Plaza Suite, American Buffalo, How I Learned to Drive, and Take Me Out. Oh, yeah, Take Me Out was going to come back.
Betrayal had Loki and Daredevil in it.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
What musicals hadn't opened? Let's see the list. Girl from the North Country, Six, Diana, Mrs. Doubtfire, Flying Over Sunset, and Sing Street.
Oh, yeah, we're getting Sing Street.
They loaded out.
So Girl from the North
I don't know if they loaded out to put stuff in storage, but someone posted a picture of Sing Street loading out.
Wow, okay.
They hadn't even started previews, I don't think.
I hadn't seen a stitch of marketing, so I can imagine that they hadn't started at all.
I hadn't even seen their marquee until I saw a picture of them loading
out. They might just be getting out of the theater and then they'll be back once.
Yeah, they might have just broken their lease and they'll find another one, or they'll go off Broadway again.
Yeah,
whatever.
Who knows?
The world is the world. You know, speaking of changes, let's go to the word of the week.
Word of the week.
A quick change. I thought quick change would be fun because Book of Mormon has my favorite quick change of all time.
Do tell.
Which is a unison quick change in Turn It Off. Alex, have you seen Book of Mormon?
No.
So in Turn It Off, when they clap for the light, they clap, the lights go off. The second clap, they have pink sparkly vests on.
Excellent.
How'd they get there? No one knows. I think they're in their pants.
Oh, when you said that, I thought you were going to answer. How'd they get there? Let me tell you. Like,
no, I asked Rory O'Malley when he was on Broadway. So I was like, tell me about the vests. And he's like, it's a secret. And I was like, they're rolled up in your pants. I know it. So I love a quick change. a quick change is basically when you have to change your costume very, very quickly, because you have to go, you have to leave the stage and go back on the stage as if a lot of time has passed, but oftentimes only 30 seconds has passed.
The best way to describe them is
chaos.
Well, no. Oh, if anything,
actually, no. It's the most organized thing you will ever
it's
see.
It's the exact opposite.
Yeah.
The best way to the best analogous is in Formula One or NASCAR racing when they switch the tires in like 5 seconds.
Yeah.
They do an amazingly a relatively complex mechanical job in the span of 5 seconds.
Yeah, they have to make sure L. Woods' dress has the specific amount of torque necessary for that Act One closer, because it's big.
Normally,
well, that one is, that quick change is probably what you would call underdressed. So she's wearing two costumes at once. So and then they go back and there's probably snaps all down the back of the first dress. They snap that one, take it off, and she has a second dress on underneath.
Just the guy behind her going, like riveting
the shirt. Like the Elsa quick change, which is she has the other dress on underneath. That is most quick changes. There is also something called a quick rig. You quick rig a piece of costume. So if you're wearing a button-down shirt that has to change very quickly, those buttons look like buttons, but that shirt has snaps or Velcro.
Or magnets.
Or magnets or a zipper.
Sometimes if I've been in a show where I really needed to get a shirt off very quickly and it was just magnets. Because the snaps took too
even,
long.
Even snaps, those snaps could fall off if you're not safe. Like, you're re-sewing snaps every night. To quick rig a shoe is very interesting. I was a dresser on a production of 42nd Street, and all of the tap shoes for one number, how you hook a shoe. You guys don't have shoes like this.
No.
A woman's shoe, like a Mary Jane.
Your face acts. No.
It's almost like a teensy tiny belt buckle on your foot.
Okay.
So imagine trying to do that very fast.
No.
No. So to quick rig it, you just cut it and you put Velcro or a snap. And so it looks like that is buckled, but it is not.
Okay.
And so you can just open the shoe, put your shoe in, and snap it back.
I've seen where they put the snap on the back of the back of the little belt loop thing, where you snap it in, so you can't see there any cut. There's no cut in the actual line of the strap.
That is what I meant to describe just now.
Okay.
But I meant that you cut it so that you can do that.
Oh, okay.
Because you keep buckle it, and then the underneath part that is attached, that's where you would cut it.
Well, this is good podcasting right here. We're killing it.
One time when I was changing someone's quick rig shoes, she was changing from tap shoes to stilettos, and she stepped her stiletto right down on top of my pinky finger.
Oh.
And I got flowers and candy the next day, and she felt very, very bad, but my hand was fine.
Yeah. Well, that's the interesting thing. A lot of times costumes on stage very rarely have
our actual clothes.
Yeah, they very rarely have the full integrity of normal clothing. Well, I'm wearing this and it looks like I'm wearing pants, but actually these are short, this is just jerry rigged within an inch of its life.
Yeah, Broadway invented the quick change pant and then basketball went for it.
Yeah.
Snaps all down the side.
Yeah.
So that is a quick change. A lot of times if you are on a show that has dressers, they will preset all of the quick changes before the show begins. We had to do this one crazy, we had to quick change basically the entire ensemble in 42nd Street. And while they were on stage for one thing, we had a quick change before a quick change basically, because we had, a minute long song to put out all of their costumes. And so you basically, if you're putting a dress on, you would lay it on the floor and you open it up so that literally someone can come in, rip their clothes off on the way in, step inside the other dress, you pull up the dress, zip the dress, they're on their way.
Oftentimes, if you were to walk back for a pretty intense quick change, in a Broadway show where you have a full costume change.
Yeah.
You are walking off stage. There's probably a team of three people waiting for you. They have all of your clothes laid out in an organized, almost like serial killer-esque fashion.
There's plastic everywhere.
Kind of how it feels like. It's very, is like very specific. That everything has its place, so they know, they can just visually go, I have everything I need. Mm-hmm. And
they oftentimes will have a headlamp flashlight so that they can see everything that's happening because they are backstage in the dark.
Yeah.
And quick changes are choreographed and rehearsed as much, if not more, than the show itself.
Yeah.
So I brought a visual aid to a podcast, but I can also describe what's happening. But I thought Alex should watch.
Okay. Before we do that, can I say what my favorite quick change is?
Yeah! No! No! Get out of here! Yeah, what's up?
It's the little shop where they do like five of them in a row on one guy.
Oh, yeah. That, honestly, that bit is always hilarious to me.
Yeah.
Like, when it's, like, very clear, when the audience is aware of a quick change happening quickly, like, that's always fun.
Yeah.
So, in the Tony Awards, when Kelly O'Hara was nominated for The King and I, they decided to do Getting to Know You, a song, into... not I Could Have Danced All Night, That's My Fair Lady. Shall We Dance?
Shall We Dance?
Those two songs, yes. Those two songs are usually about an hour apart in the show, and they involve two very huge dresses, and they decided to give her 47 seconds to change. And so, at the Tony Awards, they set up a camera, and they did a picture-in-picture of what was going on stage, and Kelly changing her outfit for 47 seconds. It's one of my favorite things to watch, and I think it is the best way to describe a quick change. So we're going to watch it now, and I'll try and narrate for those of you who are listening.
Oh, I'm here for it.
Okay, Alex, you can see the screen?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so you can see her go backstage. She takes off her, she is unsnapping her sleeves, and she unsnaps 1, 2, 3, 4... 5 undercoats, then her shirt. You can see she underdressed at least underwear. Well, period specific underpants.
There are 4 people helping her right now.
Yeah.
Someone has a glow stick in their mouth?
So it is a flashlight that she's using her teeth to turn on. I have seen them. And then now there was a zipper in the back, obviously not period specific, but that's what's gonna happen for a quick ring dress. They are now snapping it all back, and on she goes to the next song.
She looks so nice.
And I'll let you. And that's the reveal. 47 seconds.
Wow.
I love that show.
Is there a Guinness World Record of fastest quick change? Has anyone ever actually like attempted to put that on the books?
You know, I have no idea.
Well, it's all relative. Because it just depends on what you're what people are changing out from it.
Oh, yeah.
So right. Some of them are like pretty, like, you know, pretty simple.
Yeah. And also, sometimes it's the show. Like, there's a very famous quick change in Evita. She has a pretty good quick change. In, I mean, the Dame's quick change in 42nd Street. There's a quick change dress that happens on stage in Cinderella.
We all know the most impressive one. And it's honestly, I think, the thing that kept the show open as long as it did.
Tootsie?
No.
Oh.
Dude, when the Beast turns back to a man.
Oh, yeah.
That was, it's incredible.
Or even when the witch turns pretty and into the woods.
Yeah.
Very similar. Because you don't know how they took their makeup off.
Yeah.
Doesn't it feel like Hamilton should have one, but I'm pretty sure it doesn't.
I'm sure the ensemble has
it's,
some quick
I think it's just it's a lot of coat switching in that
show. Yeah, there's a lot of coats in that show.
It's a lot of coats. It's just like, hey, here's my coat. Give me the new coat. All right.
They're all, thematically chosen coats.
Going from navy to green. All right, we're done. We did it.
Quick change.
Green, that is exactly what happens.
Yeah.
But that is a quick change. They're really fun. They're pretty stressful. I had to do a few alone in college because we didn't have a lot of dressers.
When I was doing the full Monty in college...
the quick change at the end to nudity.
Well, that, but also because in the second act, I had a couple of quick changes, but I also had We had tearaway G strings that were like, we had to have prepped. So I would do the second half of the show in a tearaway.
Underdressed.
I was underdressed with a tearaway G string, and I had this, my quick change girl got just the whole.
The full Monty, you might say?
She got a private full Monty at one point. Because we were quick changing, it just snapped off. And I was like, no. I'm so sorry. You are getting a liberal arts degree. I don't know what to tell you. Like, this was bound to happen at some point. Like,
that's so funny.
Yeah. That was also the show that my costume was actively falling apart during the final number.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Costumes are, well, as we know, some of my favorite things about a show. And one of the other reasons I wanted to do something involving costumes is that there is currently a movement on Instagram and within the industry. The Costume Industry Coalition has formed. So if you want to check them out on Instagram, because there are 5.1 million creatives in the industry that are designers and working on costumes throughout the entire country that are currently out of work. So don't just think about the actors, but think about them too. Costumes are very important. The costumes for a show are often like bespoke. You would call them couture if they're in the fashion industry.
Yeah.
They keep many, many people employed.
And look, actors can always be real estate agents. You know what I mean? Like, if you, you yeah. know, if you dedicate
these
your...
These people have a skill. Like,
yeah. Bold
like
swing
a trade.
Today.
Like a trade. Like an electrician or a seamstress. You have many skills. I also went to school for the skills. Yeah.
That's hysterical.
You know what I mean.
I know exactly what you mean, but we're definitely keeping that in. That's
normally on this podcast, I say something, I have to walk back terribly, but it was Kimberly this time. Your audio is much lower for some reason.
Oh, did something happen?
It's good now. For a second, it was like a whisper.
Oh, interesting. Good. We were probably being too loud. That Zoom does that.
Gotcha.
That is the word of the week. Any other questions about a quick change?
Not really. They're cool to look at. I shudder to think what it would be. I can only imagine how stressful, at least the first couple times, if I had to help someone do one. Because like whenever I've been asked to do any kind of theater tech, even on a really, really low level, like, oh, I'm doing a set on somebody's improv show. So the team that invited me asked me to block them out. But they don't, it's improv, they don't know when, so I'm having like a panic attack going, when do I end the scene? I can only imagine if like a Broadway theater depended on me to hook several buttons in time, my hands would just go, you're on your own, and just turn into paws and not
work.
They would
have given you much training on how to hook those buttons before they let you do it on a Broadway stage.
Yeah, you practice it a lot.
I might walk out and not make it to the big.
Have faith in yourself. I feel like you drive me crazy. Sometimes it's like, you know how sometimes when it's like you like have to do something.
Yes.
It's also at a certain point. It's muscle memory, like, and then you're done, because it's all of 2 seconds of your life. So we can talk about Book of Mormon, the 2011 smash crazy hit, the last. I would say it was one of the last star maker shows before Hamilton.
Yeah.
This is one of those shows, but like, we'll get into our histories and stuff, but I'm surprised it was as successful as it is, not because I don't think it's amazing, but because some of those jokes are real rough. And so I get why, like, I would love it, but I'm like, wait, it won all the awards? Really? Okay, I'm glad, but I'm surprised, you know?
Yeah, we can talk about personal histories. This is the first and only show I saw standing room. I waited in line very, very early, and I got a standing room ticket to see the original cast right after it opened.
Oh, wow.
And it was so fun. There were a bunch of drunk frat boys sitting on lawn chairs behind us in line.
That's hilarious.
They also got to see the show, and they were very tired by the time it was 8 o'clock, because they were drunk at 6 a.m.
Yeah, man.
Alex, how do you know about this show?
So Book of Mormon was the second musical I fell in love with when I was still teaching myself to be a Broadway baby, because I first found Avenue Q and then enjoyed it so much. And then I went, I've always been meaning to listen to Book of Mormon because I'm a huge South Park fan. And I listened to that and I loved that too. And that it was a necessary step in keeping that ball rolling. So I have a lot of fond memories of the show. This was the first show that I ever listened to that does what I like to call the prom effect, which is the opening number is hilarious, but makes me sob anyway, because it's so musical, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I cry at every opening number, so yes, I know what you mean.
Yes. This one, I don't know why, Hello makes me sob, and I think it's because it helped me crack open my, musical theater cynicism, and so it's tapping that memory again. But,
from Avenue Q to Book of Mormon because you knew it was one half of the same writing team?
I did not. I just thought, that's another thing I think I would like. I didn't realize Robert Lopez was involved until I read the Wikipedia much later.
Interesting.
Huh. I mean, they are very similar, but because Bobby Lopez is involved. He does great things. Jay, your history with this show.
I auditioned for this show like 8,000 times. I love this show. I think it's like truly spectacular. I just auditioned for it a lot. I have a lot of affection for it. I would really like to play Elder Cunningham at some point, but it never really was in the cards, unfortunately. But
it was close.
God, missed it by that much. 8 times. I have a complicated relationship with this show because I thought I was going to be in it like 5 times. Wow. It's okay.
And then we, last summer, 2 summers ago, we took Jay's cousin and her best friend.
Oh, we sure did.
To go see it.
Yeah, we had a great time.
Just us and a couple of 2 18-year-old girls, and then we were walking up to the theater and we finally went, is this an appropriate thing to take these children to?
They were going into college. They were old enough.
Yeah.
They had a blast.
Yeah. My mom has always said to me that one of her dreams is that we'll go get to see this show together. I'm like, but mom, you'll hate it. You don't like South Park, and it's all South Park jokes.
I will have a great time.
What?
I don't like South Park.
You might like South Park.
Sometimes. I don't, it's that it's a cartoon. I'd like it if it was real people singing songs.
Kimberly doesn't like cartoons.
I can't focus on the emotions of
it. I just mean it's the exact same writing style.
Yeah. But I very much enjoy this. I didn't think I was going to like this show because I don't love South Park and I think it's like too crass and too silly, but like they really just reel you right in from like word go. They're like, this is what the humor's like. Get on board.
And then
you just do.
Yeah, but also in true South
Park. Also, I had 5 blockheads margaritas before I went, so.
In true South Park fashion, the plot is really tight, and the characters are very, very well, are fleshed out thoroughly. Not, like, too much, but, like, you know who everybody is on stage. Like, you have a good idea of what everyone's doing and what they want. It's very clear. Like, it's the one thing I really appreciate about this show, and I always forget about this show. It's just like, this show's really simple. Like, you think it's going to be really complicated, and it just, like, it clips.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a South Park episode.
Yep.
So, Alex, you have not seen this show. You've only listened to it.
Yeah, I read the plot on Wikipedia once, but I have not seen it.
Okay. Did you watch the Tony performance?
A while ago, yes.
It's so good. I love that this show gave us Andrew Rannells.
Yeah. And Josh Gad.
Oh, I thought he was already established when this came out.
No. They were both pretty...
They were nobodies.
They were Broadway kids. And, like, not even big ones.
Okay.
I think Andrew had done Link in Hairspray. Josh Gad, I saw in Spelling Bee. As Barfay, and pretty much that was it. This started, they really wanted like young kids that looked like Mormons and they searched the world for them. Not the world. They searched California and New York. that's where the theater kids live. They did, this show was in development since 2003.
Really?
Yeah. In 2003, the South Park guys, Matt and Trey, is that their name?
Yep.
They saw Avenue Q and approached Robert Lopez to do this show with them, and then they just started. This was one of the last shows. So we've talked about contracts before. This is one of the last shows that did a workshop contract instead of a developmental lab contract, which are slightly different. And we're getting back to the workshop contract in that when you are in the workshop of a show, you are guaranteed to be in that show.
Okay.
Whereas with a developmental lab, you are paid a higher rate, but there is no guarantee that you will ever be in the finished product of that show. So in the workshop of Book of Mormon, there was a character that no longer exists, played by Heidi Blickenstaff, who has gone on to do many other things. But as you will know from seeing the show, there are no white women in the show. And so when her part was cut, they had to pay her out of being in the show. And so she has never been in the Book of Mormon on Broadway, and she gets royalties.
Cool.
Because she was in the workshop and they cut her part.
Yeah.
And then in the same sort of vein, no, in an opposite kind of vein, Rory O'Malley, who plays Elder Cunningham?
Elder McKinley.
Was just in the ensemble. And then he had all those little bit parts. So then they wrote him that song, Shut It Off, or Turn It Off.
Turn It Off.
I'm doing really good here.
Which is my favorite song on the show.
It's my favorite as well. They wrote that song for Rory. They kept beefing up his part, and he was nominated and maybe won Best Featured Actor in a Musical.
Does this show
Does
this show have not one but two people who've played King George, Andrew Reynolds and Rory O'Malley?
Yeah.
Did we see Rory O'Malley do it or Andrew Reynolds do it?
We saw neither. Groff was still doing it when we were there.
Mm-mm. When we saw it with my parents, I thought it was Andrew Reynolds.
No, it was Rory O'Malley. Oh. It was Rory O'Malley.
Yes. It's an incredible original cast.
Yeah.
It's an incredible continuing cast. Like, still, we saw it in 2018?
Yeah, we saw it.
It was so good.
We saw, like, cast W. Like, we saw, like, and it was still just as good as it was. And I think that speaks to...
It speaks to the casting a lot, because they are still casting young kids. Like, not kids, but, like, young up-and-coming theater people. It's hard to stunt cast that show, because you really, really, really have to sing.
Yeah.
You really have to sing, and also you really, really have to be funny.
Yeah.
The thing is, if you get people that don't know how to, like, land a joke, a lot of that stuff falls flat immediately.
Yeah, the show has a lot of jokes that are very important for world building, as South Park often is. So it's like, if you don't nail the joke, oh, you just fucked up part of the reality of the show, dude. Like,
And also, like, these are, some of these jokes from, like, with the language that they use and the subject matter, it's like, if you don't stick the landing, it's like, oh, this, it suddenly becomes in bad taste.
Yeah.
Yes.
This show, we were talking about this morning as we listened, that this show just toes the line of really funny and bad taste.
It just exists. It runs like the outside of the circle of good taste.
Yeah, which I think is the magic of that, because you have your audience in this, like, living in this little bit of uncomfortable. So as soon as something is funny, there's so much tension to release.
Yeah.
So living in this, like, ha, 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 it's funny, ha, 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 and then they'll laugh and applaud forever.
I think there's also a tension, if you are a fan of Trey Parker and Matt Stone already, I think there's an added tension where you're used to seeing every episode of South Park on some level is pretty cynical. Like, they often, usually their answer to a political question they deal with is everyone sucks, which oftentimes is not right, I think, but that's their worldview. So they trade in kind of like snark and cynicism, yet the music they have written is so earnest and buoyant, and there's a tension between the kind of jokes that are going to be made and the very, very, very peppy, earnest melodies, which is a really cool tension.
Of them finding Robert Lopez and bringing him on board, because...
Well, keep in mind, Trey Parker has, I don't know if he graduated, he might have dropped out, he studied musical theory and stuff, so I'm thinking I think he wrote a lot of this himself.
You can kind of tell, who wrote what.
Okay, I can't, but...
There are certain... Some of the songs have a very, like, sharper overtone of, like, or undertone of, like, the South Park musical, the movie.
Yeah.
No Longer and Uncut. Like, there's like, the... Like
Spooky Mormon Hell Dream.
Yes.
Spooky Mormon Hell Dream, the second, when they're all singing about, like, where they're going.
Yeah, Two by Two.
That has a very like South Park vibe.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like, so does Turn It Off. Honestly, it always feels like a. But then there are, you know, the Baptize Me, which is like so Robert Lopez.
I believe.
Yeah, that's
because it just sounds like a Disney song. Like there's a reason he went on to write Let It Go.
Yeah.
And then the just speaking of I Believe really quick, like mini little love from that, the lyrics are Trey Parker all over, because that song might as well have, and Jay will know what I'm talking about and you won't, it might as well have like the subtitle, "This is what the Church of Latter-day Saints actually believes."
Yeah. Well,
we were talking about that this morning, that I was like, this song is so good because if you take out the lyrics that make you laugh, even though they are truthful,
yeah.
You can rewrite this to be like something everyone sings at church on Sunday.
Absolutely. It's very choir.
And that's why I think the Mormon church didn't fight this one too much, because
they're not lying.
Like all the things that Andrew Rannells is talking about and all the like the history play, quote unquote, that they do about Joseph Smith, they're not making anything up. And they're really not commenting on it.
Should we get into the time that I convinced a real life Mormon to stop hating this show?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I was on the subway and I see a very pretty woman kind of like look at me in the eyes. I'm like, oh, she's cute. Maybe I should try to talk to her. And then she sits down next to me. I'm like, oh my God, she's going to talk to me. And then she goes, hi. I go, hi. And she goes, what do you know about Mormonism? And I was like, too much. And she hands me a card and she starts the whole thing. And I'm just like, listen, you're barking up the wrong tree. Like, it's not going to happen. But like, you know, whatever. And I just said, hey, out of curiosity, have you ever listened to the show Book of Mormon? And her face just turns to just rock. And she goes, no, because they're going to make a sound like. And then she said the R word. And I was like, whoa, Mormons. That's a bit harsh language. And I said, well, you know, the message is kind of like everyone has their myths, and on some level you can't judge because you have your own stuff that could be criticized. And she's like, oh, maybe I will check it out. And I was like, I converted her. Cool.
That is wonderful.
Yeah, it's interesting to me how they have not worked on another show together.
Yeah.
Well, this one took so long.
This one took so long, but it also made them a boatload of money.
Yeah. To date, granted it stopped in March, they have grossed $500 million.
Whoa.
And they have productions all over the world. They usually, I think, two touring casts are out at a time. Like, it is a behemoth of a...
Do they have one in Uganda, please?
I have no idea.
That would be great.
Yeah, it's an insane show. I remember working, when I worked in a theater office, like, maybe this was 4 years ago this happened. One of the guys in the office was like, I was asking someone if they had house seats to Book of Mormon, and I was like, my mom really wants to see it, and I was trying to think of it. And he goes, and then I realized, wait, it's not 2011. Let me just go to the box office.
Yeah.
And he just went to the box, and he bought full price tickets, but at a good... in a good place and a good time out, and he was like, oh right, Hamilton is StubHub now, Book of Mormon you can just buy full price.
Yeah.
Oh,
the show's just as good,
and it's just as good. You're still not getting a discount like some other shows where you can go see it completely free, but
yeah.
So there's a restaurant right next to that theater called Cello where there used to be a comedy show in the basement that I would do sometimes, and the audience was all barked in people who couldn't get into Book of Mormon. So what? The challenge became, can you be funnier than they are disappointed they didn't get to see Book of Mormon?
And
usually the answer was yes, because once they like just got over it, they were actually starting to laugh. So they were usually a pretty good crowd.
My jokes would just be, well, this was your fault for not thinking ahead, ma'am.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why you thought you could just get in. To be fair, I did. I waited in standing room line.
Yeah.
But I got there at 6 a.m.
The only show I ever saw standing room was, I saw Spamalot standing room.
I think there was, it was like Rush and standing room was the same line. And I think by the time we got there, the Rush tickets were out, but they still had standing room, which was like $10 more.
Yeah.
And so we just said, okay.
Oh, Spamalot's another one of those shows.
I've never seen Spamalot.
Eric Idle wrote a lot of the music, and he's not really a musical, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, very true. There are, I mean, I'm sure there are more than we can think of. I also probably know people from their theater thing and don't realize that they came from something else. Like, yeah. I could probably do the opposite, like, go through, like, people's, like, albums before they were theater people and be like, huh, look at that!
Yeah.
Bon Jovi! And, like, trying to pick out.
I just like the idea of some, the one person who's like, wait, Bon Jovi did something before musical theater? What? And then that whole world opens up for them.
Yeah. Like, was there someone who, like, discovered Sarah Bareilles because of Waitress?
I kind of did. Like, I knew who she was, but that was the first album of hers I listened to. But I knew she existed. I just didn't, I wasn't into her yet.
It still sounds like a Sarah Bareilles album, so if you like that, you'd like the rest of her stuff.
I think Waitress is the best Sarah Bareilles album. That's how I think.
I would agree. Because I liked When Things Tell Stories.
Me too.
That's okay, I figured. Let's see. Should we go into Little Loves?
We can.
We've discovered that the show is very funny. It's just very funny.
Yeah.
My main little love, because I love musical theater callback, is in the beginning of I Believe when he does a Maria in I Have Confidence situation. What's so scary about that? It's very funny.
I bet this show has a lot of theater references that are still over my head.
Probably.
Because Trey Parker is a theater nerd with a capital N.
There are a bunch, and some are pretty subtle, like that I Have Confidence moment.
Well, there are, I mean, it's a lot of it is like, is it's more parody, in the staging, and it's in the music. Mm,
true.
There's like a lot of clear, it's
like
not.
There's a whole Lion King staging thing that happens in the beginning.
Hasidiga Ibowai is making fun of Hakuna Matata in a pretty spectacular fashion.
I'm gonna go on record, I love Hakuna Matata. Hasidiga Ibowai is a better song than Hakuna Matata.
Yeah,
it's so
right. I think that what I really respect the most about this show, and I guess my big love, is that while there are a lot of like overt funny moments, and it's like kind of over the top, but like if you look at the backgrounds of this show are very well painted, to use a different metaphor, in that like the music is also making a lot of references and making a lot of like tones and comments, but like it's very, very subtle. Like,
yeah.
Like commenting on musical theater, but it's not like, huh? It's just kind of like, if you know, you know. And then if you don't, it's still a good song.
Yeah.
Because like Trey Parker said that, you know, if we're going to use the term like the lovers, as in two characters who break up or get back together, whatever, it's what's his name? Price and Cunningham. So Man Up is essentially their breakup song.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a story of friendship.
My little loves are, I think Baptize Me is the most like deftly written, like it is like a razor fine point of being too much.
Mm-hmm.
And being like, come on guys, like we all know you're talking about like sex. We get it. Like we know what you're getting at. But it's just so earnestly done. That like it almost makes you feel bad for. I feel like they're writing it and they're just like, oh, people are gonna think we're talking about sex, but that, and then they're like, shame on you, like in a jokey way. Like they're earnestly talking about like making a commitment religiously. How dare you? Mm-hmm. You know, it's that and the And this is more of a visual gag from when you see the show, but it's just the moment when it's the moment when they find out what Hasadiga Ibawai means, and they're all just saying, fuck you, God.
Yeah.
And Andrew Rannells is just, his eyes are just as big as plates. And he's like, what? And then it's just like, it's directed so perfectly because you have that moment where it's almost like it's a movie. Because you see Anne Reynolds like freaking out, and then like the way it's directed is that everyone's eyes pan to Elder Cunningham, and he's just dancing along, and it's so perfect.
That song is so good.
I don't think you should say, oh no! So good.
That song is done so well, and it's so deftly written, especially the lyrics, because like they're like and Elder Price is like, that's horrible, and they're like, we know, we don't want to say this, but we have to because we're all so sad. Like
that, and my last little love, and this is, I think, Alex, you'll appreciate this as a comedian, but as a comedian and musical theater person, when it gets to the very end, like me personally, when they're singing the final song, I'm like, man, it would be really funny for him to bring up the maggots in my scrotum thing again. And then he does, and it's just perfect. Yeah. It's like, it comes at the right moment where you have the thought, like, that'd be really fun. It was really funny. Like, yeah, good. Yeah. That's the perfect third in musical theater, I think.
Yeah, you have stolen one of my little loves.
Sorry, dude.
No, it's fine. I'm happy you did that. We can both bond over this because I have the fact that not only they make the first I have maggots in my scrotum joke is really funny because, and also for Price's reaction, he's like, okay. Anyway, and it says something about how like privileged he is that they're like, we're all dying, and he's like, yeah, but I gotta get back to my story. Anyway. And then the fact that Act 1 ends with that maggots in my scrotum, and then that Act 2 also ends with it, but it's a transposed, and it's big, it's also very, very, very South Park to, like, bring back the crassest thing at the most earnest moment.
Yeah.
They do that on the show all the time.
And then they give you a whole act to forget about it.
Exactly! It's so deft. Hello is one of my favorite opening numbers of all time. I love how every part interlocks. It introduces you to all the characters. Like I said, it is a song that makes me laugh, but also cry. And I'm not even fully sure why it makes me cry, but it makes me cry pretty hard. I have maggots in my scrotum. Spooky Mormon Hell Dream is so perfect because it's one joke and it knows it. It's just saying it over and over again, spooky, 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 and the music is going spooky, spooky, spooky in terms of what it's doing.
Yeah.
And
Monster giant Starbucks cups.
Yes. And
on stage, that number is insane. It's so much. It's such.
So fun.
I think it is one joke, but it's also the visual gags are hilarious.
And like I said, I mean, it's one joke in a good way. Like it knows what it's doing and it's on purpose.
Yeah, of course.
And also the fact that what he did is shitty, but not so bad. So when him going like, I ate a donut with a maple glaze, and you're doo-doo-doo, and that theremin, like, because everything is scarier in Kevin Price's head, it's so great. And then we get the return of possibly my favorite running South Park gag ever, which is Rectus Dominus, just being sung over something scary.
Rectus
Dominus! Now, I did have...
Yeah,
they. And anytime the devil shows up on South Park, that will play, and so they worked it back in here to the point where I had a moment where I was like, "Wait, is this in the South Park universe?" And then I realized it can't be. And Jay, you will appreciate this because we know on South Park, God has already revealed himself, and he's this weird, like, blue-faced orangutan thing.
Yes.
So if Kevin's doubting the existence of God, that wouldn't make sense because he would already know God exists. So it must not be the South Park universe. But I loved that it could have been, like, the tone is the same.
Interesting.
Yes.
My little love also reminded me of my little love of anytime this happens in any musical is when the end of Act 1 is just a whole bunch of reprises sung on top of each other.
Yes.
In counterpart.
Yeah.
Because it also, like, signifies the end. Like, it's always in the point of a musical where you're like, this song is really good. And then someone comes in and starts singing a, like, reprise of something they sang earlier. And they're like, oh, cool, time for snacks. And you just get, like, this really fun song of all of their songs.
Yeah.
But it's a good signifier that you're about to have a little break.
I love that so much. I wanted to do it for my musical, but what I ended up writing looks like it's not going to. But if I can put nods, I'm gonna, because I love when shows do that.
Yeah, it's fun. Also, I can't ever say Orlando without singing
Orlando.
So that's just how Book of Mormon has forever changed our lives.
Yeah. We went to Disney World for our honeymoon, and we said it all the time.
Yeah. On the plane, off the plane. Any other loves?
So this show is, it's almost hard for me to say what my little loves are, because it's kind of like when someone goes, cut the red wire on the bomb. It's like, they're all red. Like, I love the entire thing. I guess if I had to think of anything offhand, it would be Joseph Smith, American Moses, is maybe the funniest song I've ever heard, because it's just jokes and jokes and jokes. And I can just, and what's interesting listening to the cast album and not seeing it, is A, the jokes that you're hearing are funny, but they are made so much funnier by what you can't see, which is the image of the head of the church watching's horrified face that you gotta imagine for yourself when you're just listening. But that makes it so much better.
Yes.
It can only be abject horror. And that they all mean it, like it's so earnest, but it's like, oh, okay.
It's like, he lied, he helped.
Yeah.
It's so funny. It is hard to find little loves, because the show is made up of like little laugh lines.
Yeah, we are the tears of Nelson Mandela.
Oh my God, we are Africa.
Yes.
Africans are African, but we are Africa. It's just so good. I like forget how funny this show is until I listen to it again, which is honestly not a lot.
You know, it's funny. I was as we were listening to it today, I was like,
we don't listen to this really ever.
I was
like,
we should listen to this more. Yeah. I was like, this show's really, really good. Like, it's just,
like, I was just dancing to All American Jesus. Like,
yeah, I just like forget how solid it is.
It's so good. And that's what comes from working on a show from 2003 to 2011.
But also having the guy who wrote Let It Go, and also being some
geniuses.
And two of the sharpest comedic minds of our generation.
Yeah.
It was, if you could have grouped a more perfect throuple.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's probably the only show that is like gets close to being as funny as Book of Mormon is probably Avenue Q.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, absolutely.
Like, it makes sense.
Absolutely.
Where does that revival?
It only just closed.
I know. And I feel like it should have closed a long time ago, because it would be really a rewrite.
They were kind of continuously updating things. Like, mixtape became the song was still mixtape, but they would give each other a CD, and then I think they gave each other a playlist.
I don't know. I just feel like that show is like really.
And they redid all the For Now jokes a lot.
We could get Avenue Q too.
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess
I'd see Avenue Q too.
Or Avenue Q the movie, and they like shoot it like Sesame Street.
It's interesting. I don't know why we never got a Book of Mormon movie.
I don't either. I wonder if it's like, has it even been sold to someone?
I would go see that in a heartbeat.
Oh, me too. And also, they've done movie musicals before. Not only just South Park, Bigger, Longer, Uncut. Team America, I believe, is a musical as well. And also Cannibal the Musical was their first movie.
Oh. Yeah, I have no idea. There's like barely rumors. I mean, we would all like it. I'm sure they'd write some new stuff and new jokes. Why not?
Yeah.
Do it. But like, who would be in it?
Can you cast the same people, or have they aged out of the roles?
They're way too old.
Okay.
They're probably too old to be in the movie when they did it on.
No, I think I think you use it for what it was in the first time, Star Maker. You just get two unknowns and have them blow up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Because it's
everyone, the movie, like, people will go see the movie. They don't need.
Yeah, like you go see Book of Mormon because you go, oh, it's the South Park. Like, the creators are the stars on some level.
Exactly. Which is why they were able to have virtual unknowns or just Broadway famous people.
Yeah.
And in the first place. Do you have anything else to say about the Mormon? What do we think Harold does during
this? Oh, he better get the hell out.
I think he leaves after the opening number.
No, I think if he's a surly old man, he probably loves some of the jokes.
That's
I think
true,
I think Harold loves this show.
He throws his phone out the window. And I think he's like, I like this.
Yeah. Like, I think he would probably not hear his own phone because he was paying attention so hard that like he would get kicked out but be upset about it.
Like he would just give the usher his phone. Like, I don't know, you take it.
Yeah. It's my granddaughter. You call her. You talk to her.
She knows where I am.
Do we have a review review?
We have a review review.
Let's hear it.
It is... Okay, the subject is Yes, 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 in all caps. From Carly Height, this podcast is it! And that has 5 exclamation points. Every episode is electric and engaging, and you will for sure walk away with a smile. 4 exclamation points.
Electric?
Yeah.
All right, sing out, Louise.
Okay. Ding dong. Hello, I'm listener Kelly Flynn, and I would like to share with you the most amazing pod.
Kelly.
Ding dong. Hello, I'm listener Patrick Flynn. It's a pod about a theater kid who found out way too late. His name was Alex Fosella. He always thought that musicals were super duper dumb. And then when he was 30, he realized he never got to do them and was feeling glum. His friends named Kimberly and Jay, they said, we'll teach you all about them and get you some fans. A happy Broadway family. You'll see this pod gives you the secret to a second chance. A second chance with Broadway fam is super cool. And if Alex got one, then I'm sure you'll get one too. You can chase your dream, no matter how extreme. We can only guarantee how much this pod will change your life. 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 The pod of baby. Broadway baby. Download.